I can cross over, and neither have I wings to fly. Build me a boat that can carry two, and both shall row, my love and I.
Well, I'm still processing that interview, listening to it again. That, of course, was Rachel Barkey. And just this past Mother's Day, I interviewed Rachel. She was a 37-year-old wife and mother of two young children who, after 4.5 years of fighting breast cancer, was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And I guess, you know, we didn't know it then. We were sort of surmising that this would be her last Mother's Day, and indeed it was her last Mother's Day with her husband and kids. Because a couple of weeks ago, just this past July 2nd, Rachel passed away at her home in the arms of her husband, Neil. And very graciously, Neil has agreed to chat with us today. And I am so thankful that he has agreed to this, because we, growing up in church, we always kind of only heard the glory stories after a whole chunk of time had passed and everybody was fixed and things were peachy. And it's really, really, not everybody can do this. So I don't look down on anybody who just can't do this sort of thing, talk about their grief publicly this soon afterwards. But I certainly do appreciate Neil's willingness to be vulnerable today with us on the show. Neil.
Hi, Drew. I'm from Vancouver.
Is it raining out there like normal?
No, we've had a fantastic stretch of summer, and it continues. So my kids are already outside playing, and after this interview, I'm looking forward to heading down the beach with them.
Good for you. Good for you. Folks, if you want to see the most gorgeous family in the world, you guys look like a Sears catalog family. There's a beautiful picture of them on our website, drewmarshall.ca. Click on next show, and that'll talk about today's show. And there's a beautiful picture of you guys there.
Tell about marrying up, Drew.
Tell me about it. Tell me about it. All right. How much of that interview were you able to listen to today?
Oh, I thought I'd listen to it again, but when Rachel started talking about the tough side for her about leaving me. Well, I guess I have to say from the outset, I'm probably going to cry a bit or a lot through this.
Yeah.
But
totally understandable, I think.
Yeah, so I didn't listen to as much as I thought I would, and then obviously it's the last little bit of you guys wrapping up from the interview. It's still pretty raw. It's tough to hear a voice.
Well. How did you meet Rachel?
How did we meet? We was one of those, had all these different circles of friends and overlaps where I had heard about Rachel probably for 2 or 3 years before we actually met.
Wow.
Yeah, it was one of these weird things where you'd be in a conversation and Rachel's name would come up and, well, you know who I'm talking about. I'm like, well, I know who she is, but no, I've never met her. Oh, I thought you would have met her. So, yeah, it took 2 or 3 years before we actually got to meet face to face. So, and that happened out in Vancouver about 11 or 12 years ago.
And who put the moves on who at the beginning there?
Well, I was coming off a relationship that I was still in mode where I never want to talk to a girl again. So I
you were part of the He-Man Woman Haters Club back in Spanky and Alfalfa days.
I very very much so, and I was not nice to Rachel. I kept we went out a couple times, and I would always come up with these very controversial things trying to get her to get mad at me and leave. But then she'd come back with something much more profound and put me in my place, and like, she has a lot of patience for all my built up anger, and so it uh, I, I quickly started to see that beautiful woman that she was. It was she had a big heart and lots of love, and it was easy to fall in love with her.
Do you remember when things started getting hot and heavy? Do you remember the first kiss? Do you remember that kind of stuff? I mean, my wife reminds me all the time that our first kiss was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, I was not a smooth cat.
I think it's once you hit 40, all that, there's too much, too many memories, and I would always get in trouble from Rachel for forgetting those. Like, she would know, she knew the date and time, I was wearing, where we were standing that first kiss, and I'm like, wow, it was somewhere in Vancouver, wasn't it?
She remembers the song in the elevator that was playing, you know?
Yeah. It was great. I'm married into a fantastic family, and we just I think it was May, and we were engaged by that following January, and then the following summer we were married. So we were pretty well met and married just over a year, and it was all good.
Yeah,
it really was.
Was it a cool proposal, or was it dinner? Donuts and a ring. I don't know.
I pulled out all the stops I was capable of.
Nice. We got to hear this.
I phoned some favors of a friend who, William Tell Restaurant's pretty upscale here in Vancouver, where the entrees come out on these big silver platters with the big silver domes.
Oh.
Yeah. So of course, pre-planned it with, rather than Rachel's entree coming out with just the little blue box and ring. So they did a fantastic job. They sort of do this un, deux, trois, and then voila, they lift the lids up. And I had this fantastic food. I do remember. I had this great duck, and it was really yummy. And of course, Rachel's plate was bare other than the ring. And then got down on one knee, and then this, it was both a violin and cello from the orchestra here.
Oh, come on.
No word of a lie. They stepped into the room and started playing.
Oh.
I got down on one knee, asked. People were clapping. I don't remember very little of that, of how the rest of the audience was, but the maitre d' afterwards said, it was beautiful. All our patrons were crying and laughing, and I don't remember any of that. But it was a great night. The only thing was that Rachel couldn't eat, and I'd spent $35 on her entree, and she didn't touch it. And I'm like, can I? It's not the kind of place you can ask to get it boxed up.
Yeah, could you throw that in that doggy bag?
Takeout.
Oh,
but
man.
It was all good. It was all worth it.
Wow. Looking back like this and laughing and having the memories, some people, especially this soon afterwards, have told me they feel guilty when they laugh. They feel like they should be somber all the time. How have your emotions played when it comes to the memories of Rachel this soon after her passing?
Well, I've realized that the emotions that we have, especially sort of that happiness and sad, that they aren't necessarily opposite emotions, and they really can run parallel, Drew. And,
interesting.
God gave us these whole range of emotions, and I often think there's a lot of them that we don't like touching, or we like to compartmentalize and not deal with. But, I can be extremely happy and in some ways jealous that Rachel, there's no more pain. There's just, she is at home with her creator where she's meant to be. And it's good. And I'm happy for that. I'm happy for her. Yet I can feel sad and feel deep, intense pain of the loss and this massive void that she, I always said to her, it would have been a lot easier if I would have married a deadbeat wife, so it wouldn't be such a hard, high bar to fill. But it is a massive void. And, you know, it's now figuring out what the new normal is. New normal for three rather than four. And that comes with just a lot of pain, just looking forward with Quinn and Kate being five and seven. It's going to be a long road.
July 1st, Canada Day.
Yeah.
I can imagine that being etched in your memory forever. How did the day start off knowing that her passing was imminent within the next 24 hours, or did the day start off not having a clue?
No, it didn't. Knew it was close. Everyone, including Rachel and I, you know, so how long does Rachel have? And you realize after the fact that, you know, as much as doctors have experience with past experiences, they don't really know. What they do know are those signs of the end, and definitely everything started accelerating with the decline those last 10 days, that day on Canada Day. Rachel was at a point where she was having a very difficult time taking all her medication orally on a regular basis, multiple times a day. And so her palliative care doctor, our family doctor, Rachel's main nurse, they were all over, all on their day off because of sort of hearing what was going on, and they just showed up and spent an hour and a half here at the house.
Wow.
Yeah, they were fantastic crew. And basically deciding that Rachel needed to, we need to take her off her oral meds, and we need to start giving her meds via the line.
Hmm.
And Dr. Spring, she said, I know you don't want to put Rachel in the hospital, but you need to think about it and consider it. And I'm one of those stubborn guys that, my gift is making a strong statement saying never, and then spending the next time after that figuring out how I'm going to do it. And she said, I'm only giving you two choices. It's the hospital, or you have to have a nurse here at the house 24/7. We don't have a big house, and having a nurse living with us didn't sound overly attractive, but I said yes to that. And so that afternoon they were put six different individual sub-Q lines, which are basically just lines that they just put into your tissue that they can inject the meds rather than making Rachel take them orally.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurse showed up at 4 o'clock, and I'm like, oh, this isn't good. But thinking that, I really didn't know. I didn't know whether it was going to be 2 days or 2 weeks. I knew it was closer. And so that night, even as we're going to bed, you know, the nurse is asking, you know, where I plan on sleeping. And I'm like, well, you ask? Of course I'm sleeping with my wife. And she's saying, well, I'm going to have to be checking on her through the night and giving her meds. And I'm like, that's fine. Do your thing. I'll be right here.
Yeah.
And, so at midnight, she came in. At 1:30, she came in. At 2, I hear my daughter having a conversation with somebody, and Kate had gotten up, and Caroline had said later on, your daughter came out and introduced herself and said, hi, you must be the nurse. My name's Kate. I want to see my mommy and daddy.
Wow.
So Caroline brought her back and sort of woke me up, and so Kate lied with Rachel and I a bit, and Rachel was sort of sleeping in and out, but not really able to talk, and so I brought Kate back to bed, and then it was shortly after that that I knew things weren't good, and the nurse came, and Rachel passed shortly after that. And I look back and go, oh, God's timing. Like, I could have done it, because you do what you have to do, but to have a palliative care nurse here at the house with me, with Rachel in bed, was a gift from God, and I'm grateful for that she was here when Rachel left.
Yeah. Neil, the actual moment of passing, many of us have not experienced that. Hollywood has tried to portray it, and I'm sure it has to be different for everybody's situation. What was there anything out of the ordinary that happened at that time? Do you think back on it? Does it play over and over in your head? I mean, how did you go through that?
I'd really pray, Drew, that to the Lord, that you would take Rachel in her sleep. And as awful as it might sound, but I wanted to find her dead when I woke up some morning. And
right.
You know, her leaving the physical body and going up to the Lord, it wasn't a good thing. It was really hard to watch. And I'm not going to go into it any more than that.
No,
but
no.
It was a tough thing to watch, and when she stopped breathing and just was still, and Caroline said, I think she's gone, and then of course as soon as the nurse did that, after Rachel was gone, I just pulled out my Bible, read Psalms 23 a couple times, and then I just said, that's it, Caroline. I'm like, that's just Rachel's body, but that's not her anymore. I'm going to go have a shower and wake up. And that was it. Rachel's body was here until sort of later in the afternoon the next day, and her family, mom and dad, were over, her sister and brother, a few close friends, and for some it was a lot tougher than others seeing Rachel there, but it was, for me, it wasn't Rachel anymore. The kids were very different. It was hard for me to let Quinn and Kate talk to them first thing in the morning. God was good, and just, I talked to Quinn the night before and just said, it's close, Quinn. I think mommy's going to be going home to Jesus soon. And we chatted a bit about that. But with Kate was very affectionate with Rachel's body all through the day. We'd be all in the living room, and where's Kate? And she would be back just stroking her arm and just making sure her hair was straight. And she went out in the garden and put some fresh flowers just next to Rachel on her bedstand. And Quinn was just back once and touched mommy. She said she's cold. And so he was the more pragmatic, like his dad, just why, and trying to explain it, about the heart stopping, and we need the heart to be working, the lungs to be working. When that stops, that the body stops working, that's when God takes her spirit away. And so everything about mommy, that always told us how much she loved us and always given us those kisses and hugs, that part of mommy is gone, and that part's up with Jesus now. But that was all he wanted. He didn't go back anymore the rest of the day.
Isn't that interesting how even the children process, I guess, the whole situation very differently?
Yeah, very, very differently. Quinn, right after, the first couple of days, he was worried about me dying and that he and Kate would be orphans, Dad, because when you don't have either mom or dad, then you're orphans. Of course, every muscle in your body, you want to say, no, I'm not going to die. Things are going to be fine. But it's not true, right?
Yeah.
You can't promise them that.
Yeah.
So I have to explain to him about all those people that love him, and we've got, a legal document that explains who would take care of you, but you have so many people that love you, that's who would take care of you. God decided to take Daddy home really soon. Where Kate, she's just been much more just taken over from where Rachel left off. You know, I'd mentioned to you on the phone about how that first night, just exhausted, and I'm on the computer trying to draft some emails, and Kate, unbeknownst to me, had made a bed on the floor out of cushions, and right next to her bed on in her room on the floor, and she took my hand. Like, to know my daughter, when she takes your hand, she's very intentional, and brought me to the room and showed it to me and explained to me that, you know, you're going to be lonely tonight, Daddy, without your wife, so I think you should sleep next to me. So, you know, it wasn't a good sleep, but it was a sweet sleep, because that's where I needed to be that night. She's also out of the blue. We normally get down and pray together at night, and these last couple weeks, as you can imagine, the wonderful words and thoughts of a child. Kate, out of the blue, and praying to Jesus that Mommy would make some new friends quickly, because even though I know that she knows you, Jesus, she doesn't know what you look like. So please introduce yourself to her so she knows what you look like, and make sure that she has lots of friends, because she likes friends, and I don't want her to be lonely up there.
Wow.
So, you know, she's probably, you know, my kids have better theology than I do.
But isn't that the case? I mean, I really believe, and more recently, that God uses children more than anybody to help heal in the midst of grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hear that that's the case in your situation. I'm trying to recover here, Neil. We asked Rachel, when I was talking to her, about the unfairness of all this. And you know, Neil, I'm sure you've processed a thousand times more than I would have as an outsider, but this is unfair. Mm-hmm. I don't care how you slice it or what kind of nice Christian bumper stickers you want to put on it. I think it's unfair. Your wife was an amazing woman, 37, mother of two, loved you, and now she's gone. How do you process the unfairness of this?
I'm not God. You know, back to kids and what they teach us through, you know, my kids are 5 and 7, and they teach me a lot. But my kids have this perpetual ability to be starving, and Quinn uses the word famished now, about 10 minutes before dinner time. And he truly feels hunger pains, and he truly feels that a cookie is the best way to nourish him. And
I would say I would agree with Quinn on that, actually.
And yet, I, for the most part, patiently remind him that supper is right around the corner, and that it's best that we wait to have some chicken and potatoes, and then maybe if there's time and we're still full, to have dessert. But we do this on a regular routine, and they continue to get frustrated with me, and I continue in a loving way what I truly believe what's best for them, although they think I'm being mean and I don't understand how they feel. I'm intervening and saying, no, you can't have what you want, and no, what you want is not the best thing for you. And that's how I feel my relationship is with God all the time. I constantly struggle with what happens, and I constantly don't get it, and it frustrates me that there's inequity and injustice all around me. And I feel often that God just says, you're right, but I know how things work, both from the past and current and future, and I tie them all together, Neil, and there's purpose in everything. So trust me that I'm trying. God doesn't try, but he's doing what he's doing because he's God, and I'm not. And it doesn't give me, I don't have the answers, but I'm settled in understanding the example that my kids teach me on a regular basis is that I just don't get it all the time. And I'm okay that I don't have to have all the answers.
We're on the phone with Neil Barkey. And Neil's wife, Rachel, I interviewed her on Mother's Day, our Mother's Day special, just this past Mother's Day. 37-year-old wife and mother of two young children. And we weren't 100% sure, but there was a good possibility she was facing her last Mother's Day. And that's basically what the interview was about. How do you process this journey that she was on, battling cancer? And we talked about the giving up aspect. And, you know, everybody has words of advice and how you can heal and what words you need to say and the proper prayers and the right seaweed to eat and the latest miracle cure and whatever else. But there comes a time where you resign yourself to the fact that it's time, or it's this is going to happen. And Neil, do you see that as quitting on God? Because some people do.
Yeah, it's one of those questions that I have for God, because I completely believe that God is and was capable of healing Rachel at any point. Yet also have had a glimpse of what has happened and transpired, because he took Rachel home early, and there's tension in that I don't understand that all, Drew, but it does affect how I pray, because I think that as sincere and unselfish a prayer that I can muster up is that when I prayed for my wife, she'd be here a bit longer, for Quinn and Kate, for me, there wasn't a lot of selfishness attached to it. But, he had other plans. He had other purpose. And, and so he takes Rachel home early. Does that affect next time I have someone close that's dying too soon? Again, I think you can do both, even though I don't quite get it. I think we can pray for healing up to that very day. But at the end, we need to recognize that we're not God and be able to say with peace, as well as my soul, may your will be done. And that means it's no longer in our hands, but in yours. But you know our hearts, and you know that we want her around a bit longer. And yeah, it affects how I pray and how I think about that.
Do you remember your last conversation with Rachel? Because sometimes the last 2 weeks must have been just a complete blur.
Yeah, the last few days we didn't. Rachel slept a lot just with the medication. It was would keep her sleeping through most of the day, and she'd be not necessarily with it for a lot of that time. But still, even at that last day, she would normally be alert and want to know what's going on and have some questions and have a few more things, that marching orders for me to do. That we had that even up to that last day, and just a lot. The last months have been good, Drew. It's that you wouldn't wish this experience on anyone. However, we've had some of the sweetest time together as a couple. All that, use that word. All this, that personal agenda, this self-focus.
BS.
It is what it is. It's silly. It's selfish. And you'd start and then you'd laugh, or we'd even both start laughing and just, why are we doing that? And we just, you know, we don't have much time, so let's enjoy it. And it was good. And it was all good. And, you know, for Rachel, her biggest lament was that of leaving her role as a mom. But she also, and I saw it, she was looking forward. She was looking forward of not having to deal with the pain and the struggle that she was dealing with those last months. And she just was seeing things. I don't know. God probably was giving her a glimpse of the other side a bit more than he does for the rest of us. And she was looking on it with anticipation.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Well, can I say this? Just, and I'm not qualified as a preacher, a theologian, but I just, for Rachel, what being a Christian was, it was just, you know, it's someone who just was eternally grateful for being rescued. And Rachel had this deep, deep gratitude to her Jesus for just rescuing her from her sins. And that's why, you know, everyone that was fascinated with Rachel, with this huge capacity to love and care for people, that's where it came from. You know, the analogy is weak, but if, you know, if you and I are standing on busy road and Kate chases a soccer ball in the street, and you see the car rushing, and before you can say anything, you run out and you push my Kate aside. You save her, you rescue her, and in that time, you take her life. Your life gets taken.
Mm-hmm.
That's a gift I can't repay. Right? That's that whole salvation that we're talking about. But it's not out of obligation then that I look at how can I help Drew's family. Like, I'll move to Ontario. I'll go and cut your grass. Whatever your family would need, I would be so grateful to do whatever I could. And again, I'm not bringing Drew back, but I have this great gratitude for what you did for my Kate, and I can't repay it, but I'm no obligation. I just want to help your wife and your family. And that's how Rachel saw it.
Yeah.
She just saw this, like, what I have is just this awesome gift. And so every time she saw people, and I've learned so much, you know, I don't want to go across to talk to those neighbors. She'd be the first one over there introducing herself. And just loving and caring for them. And that's, you know, that's why there was over 600 people on, you know, breaking all the fire code regulations at the church. You know, just, it was overflowing of people, and there's probably more people that don't go to church and were in church for the first time because they wanted to come and honor and give tribute to Rachel one more time. And that's just who she was. And so, yeah, her going early, I don't get it, but it's sort of your lot that when life is good, celebrate it well. Don't leave the good wine on the shelf for too long. Enjoy it, because any of us, we could get that knock on the door and we could get a curveball throw at us at any time. And when that comes up, by God's grace, you do it and you handle it best you can. And because it's not about us. It's not about us. It's this life is a testimony back to our God, because this is where we sort of put in our time. This is temporary, and the real life begins on the other side. And look, Rachel's just up there experiencing that a little sooner than the rest of us.
You see, what you just said is the reason I wanted to have you share. Even though it's been very, very soon, there hasn't been a lot of time passed since Rachel's passing, it's this raw emotion that brings out the pure, concise reality of, I think it just, you're helping to crystallize, where does this God stuff fit in the midst of our mess? And you've just done it perfectly, Neil. Perfectly. I wish I'd met Rachel. I really do. I said that to her when we spoke.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm a cynical jerk. I don't get moved by much. But boy, her authenticity and her... I mean, she actually loved Jesus. Most of us, it's pretty much a bumper sticker for most of us. But for her to say what she said in the face of death, and for you to say what you have said in the face of grief, man, your two interviews back-to-back, the most powerful thing we've had on our show this whole year. Bar none.
That's generous. Look, it's, it's just, it's either real or not, right?
Yeah.
And it's easy. I grew up in the church. I know all the right things, and I know for a lot of people and friends that I have, church is just whether it's 4-H or the Kinsmen or, some drinking group app, it's their comfort zone of where they connect with people. But it's more than that, Drew. You know that. And if I pay lip service when everything's going well, that's easy. But I hate crutches. I'm such a selfish,
stubborn male.
I'm like, I hate taking help. You don't believe how hard this has been for me the last couple weeks.
Everyone loving on you?
Yeah, and dropping off meals. I'm just like, shut the door, put the clothes for the summer sign up on the door. People ignore it. That's why I'm getting out of Dodge. I'm leaving Vancouver Monday, and I'm going to be gone for 6 weeks, and I'm not telling anybody where I'm going. But that being said, it has to be real. And yeah, I'm going through a lot, and it's going to take a lot to heal. And I'm never going to replace Rachel. It's just the, I don't want to. Too many good memories, but it's still painful.
Yeah. Well, folks, I'm going to ask boldly that you pray for Quinn and Kate, Neil and Rachel's kids. I'm going to ask that you do that now, wherever you're driving, you're listening on the computer at home, or whatever you're doing. Please pray for Quinn and Kate. And Neil, in closing, I mean, I by the way, deathisnotdying.com, that's still up and running, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
What an incredible tribute, and you can watch Rachel deliver this message to, I think it was a group of ladies, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was supposed to be 40 church ladies, but it quickly grew in numbers that we had to have it hosted at the River Rock Casino. The big casino here in Vancouver was
nice.
the only place that had the auditorium to seat the 600 ladies that listened to Rachel.
You guys keep breaking fire codes all over the place.
Yeah, no, Al. It was we probably lost a couple people because of the casino, but we probably got some people that we wouldn't normally get either, so
yeah.
It's all good.
That's well worth it. Deathisnotdying.com is a website you want to go to. But in closing, Neil, I have to ask you this. We have thousands of listeners right now. We want to know how we can pray for you. We know we need to pray for the kids. How can we pray for you, mate?
Look, it's one day at a time, Drew, and I'm, it is really all about them. I don't, being the stage and age in my life, I don't need to accomplish anything anymore. I don't have any sort of financial goals that I sort of have to meet and still reach. I just need to be a good dad to Quinn and Kate for another 10 years, and I just need the strength to do it well.
Then that's how we'll pray for you.
Thank you.
I'm the one who's thankful. This is, I really don't care if anyone's listening at this point. This has been for me. Thanks, Neil. Are you going to get over to Ontario one of these days, or?
I'm going to be out in Ontario this summer, briefly, yes.
Okay, well, love to meet you. Love to even take the kids out on a horse, a couple of horses, if you're up for it. Love to catch up. We'll talk about that later, but thank you, Neil. Really, highlight of the year for me. Thanks, mate.
Thanks. Let me share.
Okay. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Ah, wow. Okay. We have to move on because we're doing a show. Don't really want to, but thanks for tuning in. You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. If you missed any of that incredible interview with Neil, or you want to listen to the interview we did with Rachel, his wife, you can go to our website, drewmarshall.ca. We'll have Neil's interview posted by Friday this week coming up, and Rachel's interview is already there. A short break, and we'll come back with another guest, quite a moving story, so stay with us.
There is a ship, and she sails the sea. She's loaded deep, as deep can be, but not so deep as the love I'm in. I know not how I sink or swim. Oh, love is handsome and love is fine, the sweetest flower when first it's new. But love grows old and waxes cold and fades away like summer dew.